Hello, I'm Larry Martos. This is number 0157, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0517. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actress Dee Wallace, who is the only living actress who has more than 200 movie roles to her credit. It's a record that even snuck up on her.
When my publicist called me, I went, "What? Are you kidding?" I had no idea. All I know is I get a lot of joy out of my work, and I like to do all kinds of different things, different genres. And I guess when you love what you do, the universe says, "Okay, we'll bring you some more then."
Writer Michael Libling, whose first novel is entitled Hollywood North, A Novel in Six Reels. It originally started out as an award-nominated novella for the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction.
It was originally a novella, and when I was writing the novella, it wanted to be a novel. As I was writing the novella, I kept restraining myself. Oh, I could see where this could go. I could see where that storyline could go. Oh, I want this to happen to that character. I better not even include that character, because I have to keep it short. So when it came time to turn it into a novel, it was all in my head. It's the first time I've ever written anything where the entire story arc, the characters, everything, were sitting in my head.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0517, was Larry Martos, an IT manager at Lyft, the mobile app car ride service, and also in another life, Larry was a producer of my old radio show when back then he was known as Admiral Larry. Thank you very much, Larry, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Broward County, Florida sheriff's deputies say 18-year-old Nicole Peltier of Pompano Beach was arguing with her unnamed boyfriend, and she accused him of cheating on her. The couple have a 6-month-old daughter. At some point, the woman yelled at him, "I will kill you and everybody in this house." She was holding a steak knife, but that didn't sway the 23-year-old man from his response, "You don't have the balls to do it." It's unclear whether she said or only thought to herself, "You don't have the brains to shut up." She plunged the knife into his chest. Wait, does this mean she actually has testicles? He ran and asked his girlfriend's mom for help. She called 911. So he ran to mommy, who needs a pair now. The man was hospitalized in serious condition, and Peltier is charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. I think a lot of us are missing a vital point here. These two violent numbskulls have managed to spawn. We are once again swimming in the shallow end of the gene pool, and there is no lifeguard. Meanwhile, police in Slidell, Louisiana, responded to a report of a shoplifting in progress at Walmart. When they arrived, they spotted the suspect, 51-year-old Robert Myers, attempting to leave the scene. Officers asked Myers to step out of his vehicle, but he instead drove off, dragging an officer until he could release himself from the truck. Other officers pursued Myers onto the highway and into his home state of Mississippi, where he lost control of his truck, and Mississippi Highway Patrol officers, who had joined in the pursuit, were able to arrest him. According to the Slidell police, Myers told them he didn't think they could chase him into a different state. He was booked by the Mississippi Highway Patrol on charges of driving with a suspended license, because in these stories they always have a suspended license, reckless driving, and no insurance. Once those charges are satisfied, he'll be extradited to Louisiana to face multiple felony charges related to the crimes he committed there. So, he didn't think he could be chased into another state. You see, this is why Smokey and the Bandit is such a good movie, but such bad legal advice.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
When Meat arrived at Alicia Norman's table at Buffalo Wild Wings, it was so unusual she took a picture. For one thing, the birthday girl and her friends hadn't ordered any meat. They were only drinking alcohol. For another, the animal wasn't cooked, or even quite dead. Stranger still, it had arrived vertically, from the ceiling, no waiter involved. And worst of all, it was a rat. The chain blamed construction and said it had closed the Los Angeles, California location for cleaning and sanitation. But as a selfie Alicia took shows, the restaurant already had a health grade of A. Okay, full disclosure. I happen to love Buffalo Wild Wings. May I suggest the Buffalo Dry Rub? It's to die for. Just make sure it's rubbed onto chicken, not something that tastes like chicken. Not that I'd know what a rat tastes like, but then, as you know, people always say that something else tastes like chicken, which always leads me to wonder, what does a chicken taste like where you come from? Yeah. Officer Angela Sands of the Lincoln, Nebraska Police Department says an unnamed man from Stinnett, Texas, reported that he was suspicious of a woman that he met on social media when she started pushing for him to buy her an Amazon gift card. He grew concerned it might be a scam, Sands says, so he decided he was going to drive to Lincoln, Nebraska to see the woman in person first. After spending hours driving 530 miles, using a ton of gas, the man arrived in town and the woman online provided an address. Once he arrived, she agreed to have sex with him, but he had to send her the gift card first. He bought a $65 card for her via his phone while in front of the house and sent it to her, and then discovered that the woman did not live at the address where he was parked. To add insult to injury, the woman blocked him on the social media site. Okay, points for being smart enough to be cautious in thinking it might be a scam. Then, deduct all those points and more for driving over 500 miles from another state, spending all that gas money, and still forking out more cash for a gift card. This is where the axiom comes in of, if your alarm bells go off because it sounds like a scam, then go with your gut and not lower into believing that it is a scam. Yeah, better safe than sorry. A Brooklyn woman whose idling car was allegedly swiped off the street lied to cops that her 6-year-old nephew was inside so that they would try to find it faster. The 22-year-old woman told cops she left her 2008 Chrysler Pacifica running while she went into a store in East Flatbush just before noon. She told authorities that she returned and discovered her car missing. She then called 911 and claimed to the operator that her 6-year-old nephew was inside. But when responding cops found the vehicle 10 minutes later just a few blocks away, there was no child, authorities said. The woman fabricated the story in an attempt to rush officers to the scene. Police later discovered the woman's nephew had been home the whole time. She was taken into custody shortly after and is expected to be charged with filing a false police report. Aw, can't we also charge her for endangering an imaginary child? Can't we? Can't we? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it's not too unusual for Travis Smacka of the Nevada Highway Patrol to suspect someone of driving alone in a high-occupancy vehicle lane and discover that he was mistaken. Some passengers are small or napping. But recently, things got more complicated. the passenger, and I'm using air quotes here, was dead, strapped in the back of a minivan whose driver's shirt bore the logo of a funeral home. It kind of threw me off a little bit, said Smacka, and then the driver just made the funny remark, something along the lines of, so he won't count? According to the Highway Patrol, no, he wouldn't. Passengers must be living, and several people in the funeral industry said hearses usually don't try to use HOV lanes when they're dead, crematorium manager Fred McDermott said, they're cargo. Smacka gave the driver a warning. Ooh, now we're into a gray area here. Or should I say, with an ever-graying passenger? So, what if you're driving an ambulance with a patient in the back, but they die en route? Do they become cargo during the course of the journey, or are they considered what they were when they entered the vehicle? I don't know. I'm just asking for a friend. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Dee Wallace is back on the show because she has reached another milestone in her career. This year, she becomes the only living actress with 200 film credits to her name. That's an astonishing number of films, which speaks volumes about her immense talent. Dee joins us on the line from California. Hi, Dee.
Hello, darling. So happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. Full disclosure to our audience, you've been on this program several times. I will use any excuse to speak to you. And luckily for me, you keep giving me great excuses.
Well, thanks. It's teamwork, baby.
Yes. So 200 film credits. That's an astronomical movie record for you. It almost makes me feel like, you know, that old quote from Oklahoma, I'm just a gal who can't say no.
That's a good new take on that lyric. Yeah, well, when my publicist called me, I went, what? Are you kidding? I had no idea. All I know is I get a lot of joy out of my work, and I like to do all kinds of different things, different genres. And I guess when you love what you do, the universe says, okay, we'll bring you some more then.
You have so many roles, and of course the ones that are most famous. You were Elliot's mom in E.T. the Extraterrestrial. You were in the movie Cujo. You were in 10. You were in The Howling. Yet, I'm just wondering, do people actually, when they stop you on the street or see you on the street, do they know your name?
Oh, yeah. I just went to the Pageant of the Masters down here in Laguna Beach last night, and I had 5 people come up to me and go, oh, you're Dee Wallace. Could I have your autograph? Could I have a picture with you? It always surprises me, quite frankly, because, you know, some of my roles have not been too pretty, let's face it. The upcoming role in 3 from Hell, oh my God. I look at the pictures now and I went, I loved getting behind this character. And I went, but I look at the pictures and go, wow, you really let yourself look like that. Of course, I came home pretty much every day and went, wow, you really let yourself go that far in that scene, right? But that's what you do with Rob Zombie. Go ahead.
Is it like a parlor game for you when somebody comes up to you because you have so many different roles that you're famous for? When you see somebody coming towards you, do you have to try and guess? I wonder which one they're relating to.
No, because usually they tell you right away. I mean, when they start with, you're E.T.'s mom, right? I know we're going toward E.T. Or they'll come up and go, oh, my God, Dee, you scared me to death in Cujo, right? Or The Howling, right? Or, you know, I grew up on you with all these films. Everybody's grown up on me, baby. I've been here forever. So they usually let you know right away, what they're following you from.
I facetiously mentioned that you don't say no to a role, but seriously, how do you go about picking roles? What are you looking for in a character when somebody comes to you and say, Dee, I want you to play this?
Well, first of all, I look at the script as a whole to see how well it's written. I look at who's involved, what experience they've had. And then I go to the role and I read the role, and if she gets in me and takes me over and everything else is in alignment, that's a big yes. And if it's uncomfortable, if I feel like I can't quite get her in me, then I usually pass on the project. And sometimes I really like the part, but the movie and the subject matter isn't something that strikes me, and I'll pass then too.
With all that you've done, is there still something you haven't done that you want to do?
Yes, I've always wanted to play a nun who's really, really soul-searching for the truth. For the truth of life, the truth of her religion, the truth of the limitations from her religion. It's kind of a nun that's going, what's it all about, Alfie? I really want to know. And I don't know. The other side of me is I have a whole healing practice and radio show where I channel for people. And it's a subject that really fascinates me, about how we are our own worst enemies and we're really holding ourselves back. Because of all the limiting beliefs and perspectives we've been taught from society, from our religions, from our, families, our parents who were taught incorrectly also. So it's an important subject for me to explore.
Now, again, you passed the record, over 200 films. You got, I think, what is it, 4 coming out? There's, you just wrapped up production in Await the Dawn. There's,
yes.
Critters Attack. You mentioned Rob Zombie. He has a film called 3 from Hell. And there's the family film Renovation of the Heart.
A film called Dolls is out right now also. So I'm starting, I think it's out right now, either that or it's coming out like in the next 2 weeks. It's been a great year. It's been a really busy year. And I like it that way. My publicist said, oh God, Dee, now you can rest. And I said, nope, now I go for 3.
Well, have you ever had time off, and what's time off like for you?
Oh, sure. I really, know how important balance is in our life. So, the end of August, my guy and I are going to Bora Bora for 7 days. I'm pretty vigilant about keeping the balance in my life. 6 o'clock comes, if I don't have to be at a charity event or a red carpet event, that's it. I don't answer the phone. I don't do any more interviews or private sessions with my healing people. That, I have my glass of wine, my guy and I go to a movie or we watch something on TV. That's, and my day doesn't start until 8:30. And I keep, I keep a pretty firm hand on those rules.
Well, speaking of places like Bora Bora, is there somewhere in the world where you're not recognized?
Well, that's a good question. I'm trying to think of, not so much in China. Maybe they don't, maybe they're not big on horror films there. I don't know. Certainly was in Japan when I went to Japan to open E.T. for the princess there. Of course, I was, in a circle of people that, who were there, especially for that film, and knew me and all that. But pretty much everywhere I go in the U.S. and Canada and England, people come up to me all the time. I love it. They're very respectful, and I love hearing the stories. I love doing the conventions. I have several of them coming up and some awesome new pictures and products. So if you're around where I'm going to be, come see me. And you know, the thing I'm doing right now that I'm throwing my whole self into is my daughter's, Gabrielle Stone just wrote an incredible book on relationships, and it's available on Amazon. It's called Eat, Pray, FML.
I was about to bring that up. It's a very...
Have you read it?
I have not read it yet, but it's from a very personal place for her, isn't it?
It is. We found out like a year and a half into her marriage, that her husband had been having an affair for about 6 months with a 19-year-old. So she went through a tough divorce. A little while later, fell madly in love with this guy, and he invited her to travel Europe with him for a month. And 2 days before they were ready to go, he said, "You know, I'm backing out. I have to go by myself."
Wow.
So you put that together with her dad dying at 7 and her high school sweetheart getting killed in road rage as soon as he graduated. She's had an amazing amount of abandonment from male figures in her life. And so she looked at me and she said, "My biggest fear is to be alone. And so I'm going to go alone, Mom. I'm going to do this trip alone," which freaked me out. But she stayed in hostels, met wonderful people, made a lot of mistakes, but really learned how to love herself and move back into her own power. And anybody who feels like they have lost that in their lives and given their power away because of a relationship to somebody else, read this book. She will bring you back.
We're talking with actress Dee Wallace, who is the only living actress to have appeared in over 200 movies. We'll take a quick break and come back with a little bit more of Dee because, as I said, I'll take any excuse to talk to her here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And this is indeed the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're talking with actress Dee Wallace, who has appeared in over 200 motion pictures, and no other living actress can make that claim. Now, Dee, before the break, you mentioned your daughter's father passed away when she was only 7. Your late husband was a great actor in his own right, actor Christopher Stone. We've talked about this before. Not only was I a big, big fan of yours, but I had a man crush on your husband. I got to tell you that right now.
That does not surprise me. He was one beautiful, virile, kind, sweet guy.
I watched him growing up on television, and I was always a fan of his and his work. But speaking of television, with 200 movie credits, that's not all you've done. You mentioned you've got a radio show that you do, and you've done a lot of television. But for the most part, with the exception of maybe a recurring character on a show, you haven't done a lot of series, have you?
I have done 5 series.
Long-running series?
Long-running. What's long-running these days? But these were in the past, although I have a beautiful series on right now on Amazon Prime called Just Add Magic that's written for a younger audience, a fabulous, beautiful show, just been picked up by NBC Children's Network, just got picked up in Canada. So we did that for 3 years, And I've done search and rescue with Robert Conrad. The new Lassie, Together We Stand, which was a very big, it was voted the best new show on TV when it came out. But that was, you know, it was a while ago. I have done series. If I would ever do another series, it would have to be a challenging role. Because when I do the same thing over and over again, it's not as interesting to me. It doesn't rock my boat as much as being able to take on whole bunches of different characters. So, I would love a part in a series like that where I could play a lot of different, characters and roles and hide behind things. Yeah, that would really rock me.
You did a short stint for a while, even on, if I'm not mistaken, General Hospital.
I did. I was up for an Emmy for it. Yeah.
That's a sort of different muscle when you got to go through that much, that many pages of dialogue.
Oh, my God. Hardest thing I ever did in my life. I was scared to death. Dear God, they work so fast, But I think it's like a muscle, like you said. If you did it consistently, you get into the role of it and the pace of it, and you exercise that muscle of learning lines like lightning, right? But it really stretched me to do that. I'm glad I did it. It broadened my scope as a performer.
I even loved you in playing a mom in Grimm.
Yeah, we had a ball doing that. I was Monroe's mom, and we were there for the wedding. I was sorry they didn't bring us back for the birth, I think we should have been revised for that. But they were getting ready, I think, to go off the air at that point. And but anyway, we had a great time. It was a beautiful company to work with.
Did Little Dee Wallace in Kansas City ever think she would be starring and appearing in over 200 movies?
I don't think Little Dee Wallace ever thought about that, but Little Dee Wallace knew she was going to make it. I did. I knew I was going to make it, but I didn't think about making it. I just knew it and went off to do what gave me joy. I got my teaching degree and taught a year of high school so my mom could relax. And but I left Kansas, had never been out of Kansas in my life when I got to New York. And I just always knew.
Wow. No, I hear a little dog barking in the background.
Yeah, it's my big dog, yeah. Sorry.
It's not Cujo, is it?
No, it's not Cujo. She's a little Kelpie, which is part of the sheep herding dogs. And she's just the love of my life. Her name is Freedom, and she's a rescue.
Now, with all that you do, I mentioned you do a radio show. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the other side of my life is I'm a clairaudient channel, and I help people really understand where they're blocking themselves. And so my show's on 9 a.m. Pacific time every Sunday morning. If you go to my website, iamdwallace.com, on the homepage, it'll tell you how to connect with the show. And you can call in and ask about sex, money, success, relationships, health, anything that you need information and guidance from.
Wow. Now, I before we let you go, I got to ask about Bupalupaloo. We spoke about that. How's the little bear doing?
Well, the little bear is out there helping a tremendous amount of people. We are not consciously spending a lot of time on the bear right now. Because we're in discussions with maybe expanding it and doing something else in a different direction with it.
Okay.
But thank you for asking about him.
Dee, it's always a pleasure and an honor to have an opportunity to talk with you. I mean, the end is, there's no end in sight. Over 200 films, only living actress with over 200 films, and you are still working at a pace that would tire out a lot of younger people.
That's true. I take really good care of myself. But again, you know, if you love what you do, you don't get tired. You just want to do more of it. So I spend my days between auditions and private sessions with my healing clients and interviews with fabulous people like you. And it's just, there's never a dull moment, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
And I get the sense, as you said, that you would have been successful no matter what you did, whether it was acting or something else. And I think the reason that is you seem to have such a thirst for life in general, and you seem to enjoy everything you do. And so everything you do, none of it's really work, is it?
Nope, that's true. Everything I do, I love. I get up every morning and go, oh, wow, what do I get to do today? What are all the varied and sundry things that I can do here, you know? And life just keeps bringing them then because the universe knows I want them.
Well, again, people will be able to see you later this year in Critters Attack. They'll see you in Three from Hell.
Three from Hell.
Renovation of the Heart. You just finished Await the Dawn, and you mentioned another one that is coming, that is just out.
Dolls.
Is out.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
So, been a busy year, and I like it that way.
Dee, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you. My pleasure. Have a good one.
Actress Dee Wallace, who holds the crown as the busiest actress in films today. She has 4 movies coming out this year alone. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the page for this week's show, which is show number 0517, and you'll find links to Dee's website. Also, we mentioned her very busy daughter, Gabrielle Stone, and her new book that is coming out. So we'll get in contact with Gabrielle and try to have her on the show next week. Stay tuned for that.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to author Michael Libling. His new book is called Hollywood North, a novel in 6 reels. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Google Podcast or Apple Podcast button located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? On July 6th, Okaloosa County, Florida sheriff's deputies responded to a 911 call after a 13-year-old boy stabbed his 15-year-old brother in the arm 3 times with a multi-tool. The boys from Clarksville, Tennessee, were sitting in a parked car in Crestview, Florida, when the incident occurred. Lieutenant Todd Watkins said that the younger boy was tired of his brother picking on him, and he told officers he'd rather be in jail than 8 hours in a car with his brother. "I stabbed him, and I don't care about going back to jail," he said. Okay, did you pay close attention to that sentence? A 13-year-old is saying that he doesn't mind going back to jail. Eww. While the 15-year-old was in the back of an ambulance being treated, he was overheard calling some of his friends to retaliate against his younger brother. The 13-year-old was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. We really haven't come that far since Cain and Abel, have we? Talk about skewed family values. Still with Okaloosa, the first mistake for one particular homeowner was letting 44-year-old Matthew Morrison sleep in a tent on his lawn. But that's what he did. A homeowner in Crestview, Florida, allowed Morrison to bunk on the property as a favor to someone he was trying to help. But things went south on July 6th when Morrison entered the home without permission and threw lighted firecrackers under a sleeping 9-year-old girl's bed. The homeowner chased Morrison out of the house with a stick. Morrison told Okaloosa County Sheriff's deputies it was a prank gone wrong, but the little girl was left terrified. The very busy Lieutenant Todd Watkins went on to say, "I'm not sure what he was trying to accomplish. The prank thing really didn't sound like it was a legitimate reason." Well, maybe this has something to do with it. When Morrison was arrested, officers found 2 grams of methamphetamine in his pocket. Morrison had a prior criminal history, including drug charges, and he was charged with burglary and possession of methamphetamine. You're living in a tent, you're on drugs, but you still have fireworks. This all boggles the mind. Also, July the 6th was a pretty weird day in Crestview, Florida, if you ask me. And that's saying a lot, by the way, when we're talking about Florida. Anyway. In a bizarre investigation, Belgium police have identified a member of the anonymous Belgium Hacker Collective while investigating an arson case at a local bank. The perpetrator, a 35-year-old man, was initially arrested after throwing a Molotov cocktail at the Kralen Bank office in Belgium back in 2014. Police tracked down the suspect because he dropped a USB thumb drive on the ground while or after throwing the Molotov cocktail. Data on the thumb drive led police to a man identified in court documents only as Brecht S. A subsequent house search and investigation into the man's background and computer devices revealed a long history of cybercrimes. They said that in addition to throwing the Molotov cocktail, Brecht also launched hacker attacks against Kralen's e-banking portals, bringing the site down for hours on numerous occasions. In court, Brecht said he attacked the bank because Kralen officials refused to meet with him following the disappearance of 300,000 euros from his mother's bank account following the divorce from his father. He justified the attacks as revenge for his mother's financial losses. Wow. Just imagine what he would do to dear old dad. In addition to that, Brecht and his group have gone after FIFA, the International Soccer Federation, and he also orchestrated other hacker extortions, including one aimed at an unnamed pizza restaurant. Last week, he was sentenced to 18 months in prison for his hacker crimes. That's in addition to his 3-year prison sentence for arson related to throwing the Molotov cocktail. Well, let's hope electronically he doesn't get so much as a Ms. Pac-Man while he's behind bars. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a craving for cake batter ice cream brought New York City police officers to a Baskin-Robbins store in Coney Island on June 29th, a fortuitous detour, as it turned out, when 33-year-old Emmanuel Lovett walked into the shop and tugged on his denim shorts, a loaded pistol dropped onto the floor, and officers swarmed Lovett, who, it turns out, had a robbery record that prohibited him from having a firearm. He was charged with criminal possession of a firearm. No word on whether he or the officers enjoyed their ice cream. Nothing like going off half-cocked in an ice cream store, huh? Yeah. I scream, you scream, we all scream, gun! Anyway, let's go to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Writer Michael Libling has had a successful career writing short stories, but he's about to release his first novel. It's a coming-of-age mystery that spans seven decades and takes place in the hometown where he grew up, that being Trenton, Ontario. The book is called Hollywood North, a novel in six reels, and it grew out of his 2014 novella that was nominated for a World Fantasy Award. Michael joins us on the line right now from here in Montreal. Hi, Michael.
Hello there, Peter. How are you?
Jazz tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. Full disclosure, of course, I know you well. We worked together in the old radio station. And for our other listeners out there, they should also know, you actually hired me as a freelance writer, so I thank you for that.
Funny, I don't remember you at all, Peter. I was on radio with you and I actually hired you. Boy, oh boy, isn't that strange?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
As you were saying.
The book, as I said, is Hollywood North, a novel in six reels. And as I said, you have done a lot of short story writing. Going from a short story to a full novel, is that exponentially more difficult?
Just in terms of time. I mean, a short story can take... For me, I'm a very slow writer. I correct everything as I move along. I tend not, like a lot of writers will sit down and they tell you, once you start writing, you've got to finish it, go from beginning to end, don't correct anything. I don't work that way at all. I can spend a morning fixing a sentence. With Hollywood North, and that's, I'm going to ramble on here, but that's a great question, because with Hollywood North, it was originally a novella that appeared in the November-December 2014 issue of the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. And when I was writing the novella, it wanted to be a novel. But before that, despite having sold lots of short stories and I'd written novels before, I wasn't able to sell a novel. And I said, I don't want to spend a year working on this and with no reward again. I'd been through that before. So I decided as I was writing the novella, I kept restraining myself. Oh, I could see where this could go. I could see where that storyline could go. Oh, I want this to happen to that character. I better not even include that character because I have to keep it short. So when it came time to turn it into a novel, and there's reasons why it did become a novel, it was all in my head. It's the first time I've ever written anything where the entire story arc, the characters, everything were sitting in my head. I knew exactly what I wanted to do and where it was going to go.
As I mentioned, it takes place in your hometown of Trenton, Ontario. So tell us what the story is about.
Okay, well, probably a backgrounder is best. I grew up in Trenton with two older sisters in the 50s and 60s. And the town isn't anything special. It certainly didn't appear to me anyhow, living there, that it was anything special. It was a great place to grow up. There was the Air Force Base there. There were beaches nearby. It was a quiet town. It was a population then of about 14,000 people. My parents had a small restaurant there as well. It was called the Theater Bar. And if anybody knows Trenton, it was on the corner of Dundas and Division in the same building as the movie theater, which was great because I got into the movies free every Saturday. I went to all the matinees. It was only after leaving Trenton that I actually found out what a strange little place it was. It has a really bizarre history. 1898, it had one of the largest train wrecks in Canadian history up to that point. 12 people were killed at the time. 1918, there was the British Chemical Plant or something. It was an explosion, a massive explosion that destroyed this. They were making munitions for World War II. 1937, there was a plane collision over town. In 2010, as you may recall, the commander of the Air Force Base, CFB Trenton, was arrested for serial rape and murder. The thing I've left out in telling you all of this, and again, living in the town, we didn't know any of this, but the biggest thing that nobody ever talked about, it was insane. It was the fact that from 1917 to 1934, Trenton had a movie studio. They produced, tons of shorts, one-reelers, two-reelers, and six-reelers, of course, which if anybody doesn't know what a six-reeler is, it was a silent film. It was a feature film. In fact, they made the most expensive silent film in Canadian history there called Carry On Sergeant. But I'm living in this town. I'm in my parents' restaurant. I speak to the regulars all the time. People would come in, they'd grip my arm, and they'd just tell me stories. But this never came up. I didn't even know about it. I heard inklings in the late 80s because they put up a plaque in Trenton that it did have a movie studio. And then in, I think, 1988 as well, a woman by the name of Peggy Diamond Levy wrote a very small book, but a terrific book, called The Movie Years. And this outlines Trenton's entire history in terms of its film. It was the first place in Canada to be called Hollywood North. But again, I didn't know any of it. So what inspired the novel was all these incidents that I talked about, the train wreck, the plane collision, the commander of the Air Force Base, and the Hollywood, the film studio, I tie it all together. There's a connection to it all, including the fact, why didn't I know about it? Why did people living there not know? Why didn't teachers tell us about it?
Isn't it kind of ironic that you are someone who is known for trivia? You did a trivia radio show for 20 years, and yet there's a deep, dark secret about the hometown that you lived in that no one else seems to know about, including the other inhabitants?
It's the craziest thing of all, and it makes me angry in a way. I mean, I would have loved to have known there was a movie studio there. It might have been life-changing. You know, I went to the matinees. Every Saturday I was in that movie theater from 10 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon watching all these movies. And to think that Trenton was also producing comedies with Broadway stars and even stars from the actual Hollywood would come all the way to Trenton to appear in these films, yeah, it boggled my mind. As much as I hate to say, it boggled my mind.
So you decide to write this book, and again, it's a novel, it's fiction, Hollywood North, yeah. A novel in six reels. Because you're delving into the history of the town you grew up in and the memories of what took place around the town you grew up in, if somebody who grew up with you were to read this book, would they recognize people in the book?
I won't go there. You know, this is all fiction, Peter. It's all fiction. And if anyone sees themselves or someone they knew, strictly a coincidence. But they will recognize a lot of what I talk about in the town. I think anybody who has ever grown up in a small town will recognize a lot of what goes on in this novel. I was in Trenton, I guess, a week ago this past Saturday, and I did my first reading there. It's the first time I've ever read from Hollywood North in the place where it's set. And going into it, I was really very nervous about it. I wasn't sure how they'd react. If you visit Trenton today, it's not the prettiest town. There are a lot of nice towns when you travel between Montreal and Toronto, beautiful little downtowns that are well-preserved. Trenton's is not well-preserved. Now, there's some reasons for it. In the novel, I have a sentence. Trenton has been plagued by fire. They've had lots of fires there. In fact, I think in the novel, I make a reference to, in addition to hunting, fishing, and arson, the other favorite pastime is drowning. There's been a lot of tragedy in the area. So I talk about the elementary school I went to, which was called Dufferin Street School. It stood at the foot of Mount Pelion, which is the highest point in that region of Ontario. It's 200 feet high. There's a cannon on top of it. Champlain is said to have been there one time, and he's scouting out the area. But this was great. At recess, we'd go tobogganing during our recess at that school. The thing about the town is, and I was describing the downtown as not being all that super attractive, there's been very little heritage protection, including Dufferin Street School. So Dufferin Street School was built in 1913. They tore it down, I think, circa 2007, and they've built a seniors residence there. A beautiful building. The seniors residence is really nice. But the point is, they built this without any sense of the mountain behind it. So if you have to be walking by or driving by the area, you can't even see the mountain anymore. It's been just obliterated by this building. So I read about these things. I talk about them in the novel, and I thought there'd be some hostility from the people who attended, you know, Trentonians. No, they either laughed or smirked knowingly and coming up to me after and, you know, concerned about certain things about the heritage protection or the lack thereof and elements like that. So, yes, I'm still not sure I answered your question.
Well, you've written in your short stories a lot of science fiction. Would you consider this novel to be science fiction in any way?
No, this isn't science fiction. And really, I don't write a lot of science fiction. And when I do, it's not what you'd call hard science fiction. I write mystery, fantasy, horror, and some science fiction. But what I really do is I write stories about everyday people living everyday lives, and I like to drop one little element into it. With Hollywood North, it's a coming-of-age story, a mystery with elements of fantasy and horror, and it's all based on true events. I mean, there's things in there that aren't true, obviously, because it is fiction, but it is based on actual happenings that are pretty creepy, and not just in Trenton, but in other areas of Ontario, too, that might surprise a lot of people, discovering that, I didn't know that person came from there. Wow, that really happened in that town? So there's some pretty creepy things that are, again, all connected back to Hollywood North.
If you were to do the Hollywood, the elevator pitch for a Hollywood producer, would this be a cross between Stand By Me and Stranger Things?
Stranger Things is how some people have reacted to it. In fact, someone who did a blurb for it had described it as he dropped in Stranger Things. He also dropped it in the same blurb. It's an author called Claude Lalumiere. He also thought it was Woody Allen as well. So Woody Allen and Stranger Things, perhaps. When you write something like this and the agents get involved, they will frequently have you put together a TV pitch, which is something I did. And you have also that famous line. And in describing this, I said, it's think of the Wonder Years meets Stand By Me meets Hugo.
Wow.
So they all sort of tie together. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to reading it. The book is Hollywood North, a novel in six reels. It's coming out when?
The ebook will be available everywhere July 30th. In Canada, the paperback release is July 30th, and in the U.S., August 13th.
Congratulations.
And I got the rest of the world, too, but I'll let it go at that.
Congratulations on the book, Michael. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thanks, Peter.
Author Michael Libling. His book is called Hollywood North, a novel in six reels. Michael's website is michaellibling.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the page for this show, which is show number 0517, and you'll find links to Michael's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can pre-order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you here on this program before we get to the moment you're all waiting for. That would be the idiot of the day. So let's get right to it, shall we? Cops from Dixon, Illinois, arrested 49-year-old Jennifer A. Janice Yeager after receiving a tip about an Audi SUV traveling down the road with two children sitting in an inflatable pool on top of it. Officers from the Dixon Police Department spotted the white Audi Q5 with the blue blow-up kiddie pool on top of it. After being stopped, Yeager reportedly told cops she had driven into town to inflate the swimming pool at a friend's home and had her two young daughters ride in the inflated apparatus atop the vehicle in an effort to pin it down while driving home. Wow. Science major. Yeager was arrested and charged with two counts of endangering the health or life of a child and two counts of reckless conduct. Meanwhile, folks, remember, anybody can be a parent, but in most places, you need a license to get a dog. Yeah. I was seriously considering making her the idiot of the day, but I didn't. She was close. But we have reached that moment, boys and girls. It's the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
The desire to have a selfie as a souvenir from running with the bulls in Spain turned into a near-death experience an American lawyer says he'll never forget. A charging bull ran over and gored San Francisco resident Jaime Alvarez in the neck during the first run of this year's festival in Pamplona. The joy and excitement of being in the bull ring quickly turned into a scare, into real fear for my life, said the 46-year-old Alvarez at a regional hospital where he is recovering from surgery.
What a gullible. What an incow poop.
Doctors told Alvarez the bull's horn went deep into his neck and fractured part of a cheekbone. That it didn't hit the jugular vein or major arteries was described to the injured patient as beyond miraculous. Alvarez said he climbed onto a fence for safety and only returned to the arena to shoot a short video when he thought that the danger had passed. He wanted a 5-second video scene to say, "Here I am, I did it." That's when the stray bull came at him, running fast.
"Stop steaming up my tail! What are you trying to do, wrinkle it?"
The impact was unlike anything I've ever felt. It was like being hit by a car or a truck, Alvarez said. Clearly, he's never seen the Looney Tunes cartoon, Bully for Bugs.
"Of course you realize this means war."
At this point, we're not going to question the idiocy of participating in the running of the bulls, because that's in a category all to its own. But why, oh why, when you have successfully traversed this sprint of stupidity, would you be compelled to compound the danger of the event by hanging around on a still active course to take a selfie? One reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0517. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0517. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who rakes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.